When was the last time you had an honest conversation about death? It's a question we asked last week on The Juggle because it seems like Western cultures in particular are reluctant to chat about it.
So many cultures, when somebody dies, they don't call up the funeral director at 2 a.m. or the doctor at 2 a.m. and say, oh my gosh, Auntie May has passed away. They embrace the death. They call the family round. They start feasting. They start planning the funerals. And it becomes this whole way of saying goodbye, but with full of love and respect onto the next journey.
That was author Lisa Herbert, who was on the show last Monday on The Juggle, talking about how to talk about death. And once you put death on the table, how do you go about making sure that you're seen off in the way you wanted, that you would want? Getting a funeral right can be difficult. Making decisions through the haze of grief is even more difficult. Kevin Hartley was a funeral director for about 25 years. Hello, Kevin.
G'day, Emma. Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
Thank you for being with us. Now, how did funerals change over the quarter of a century that you were a funeral director?
I think the biggest change in funerals in Australia was when an ex-vacuum cleaner salesman by the name of Keith Russell started a cut-price funeral company back in the 80s in Adelaide. Really what that did was change the costing of funerals, but really the funeral itself hasn't changed much. You've still got a man with a hearse and a coffin and bits and pieces. What we have now is emerging, though, is a difference in the way the people who want a funeral are starting to look at it. They want to be more involved.
When you look at the cost of funerals, it can still be quite expensive, can't it?
Yeah, very. I read an interesting paper from the UK recently where it was titled, you know, Is the Funeral Industry Still Fit for Purpose? And they used a couple of interesting phrases in there. They talked about funeral poverty, which is a problem in certain sectors of society. A funeral is can be several thousand dollars. And that can be a real issue for some families, for sure.
Funeral poverty, so that some people cannot afford it?
Correct. And there's people who sort of fall through the cracks. If you're absolutely destitute, all states in Australia have a system whereby the government will assist with a very basic funeral. But if you have, you know, any certain level of income or assets, then you're stuck with the responsibility, so to speak. So then you're in the unenviable position of kind of shopping around for a funeral.
What's the base price?
Oh, look, I've been out of the industry now for about 5 years, but you can still, in metropolitan areas, funeral directors readily offer cremations for around $3,000, $3,500. But bear in mind, that's the essential bare bones, if you like. Oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't funny. Of the services you require. And then, of course, once you become involved in it, you're often tempted or interested in buying other things.
What about natural funerals? We had a couple of people call in last week when we were discussing it, saying that they would like what you're calling as a natural funeral. Do you see them coming in at all?
Yeah, look, this is my passion. For a number of years, I worked within the funeral industry to try and see if there was some way to genuinely deliver a natural burial to people. When I say genuinely deliver it, the problem is that the funeral industry is highly regulated by state legislations, and some of that's very sensible. You know, health and occupational safety requirements need to be met. But that same legislation makes it very easy for the funeral industry to stay exactly the way it is and keep offering the same basic services over and over. And when a death occurs, people are fairly naive consumers most of the time in that circumstance. They often feel like they have to make a lot of decisions in a short period of time. And one of the pieces of advice I always give people is you don't have to do this in 2 days. Slow down the process, because the best funerals that you ever get arranged are the ones where there's a little bit of thought gone into it and you only buy or order or arrange exactly what you want. And that brings me to natural burials, because over the years as a funeral director, every third house I'd ever go to, there'd be sort of some uncle or second cousin, and, you know, for a little bit of lightness in the moment, someone would say, well, you know, why don't we just bury him down near the back shed, because that's what he always said he wanted. And I began to take notice of that and discovered that, in fact, it was some research now, probably 30 to 40% of people would actually just like the simplest possible burial. Take the deceased body, put it in a container or a coffin with the minimum possible inputs in terms of its construction, something that's biodegradable, and be buried in a place that isn't a cemetery. Be buried in a natural area where you can just have some trees planted on top.
Mm.
And the problem is that within the current funeral industry, the response by the industry to people wanting a natural burial is that cemeteries set aside a couple of acres within a normal cemetery, plant some trees and say, here it is. And that's the only option people have got, because you can't just go and be buried in your backyard. One of the things that I'm doing now, I'm no longer in the funeral business, in the commercial business, but I consult for a really interesting young charity here in Armidale in New South Wales, and they have a vision of natural burial areas associated with landscape level revegetation projects. And I've been working with them for about a year, and I believe this is the way that people will ultimately get a natural burial. It's just perfect.
Ultimately, it's a fair way off?
No, not at all. We're at the pilot project is at a DA stage with local council now.
Wow. Where's that, Kevin?
Armidale.
In Armidale.
Or New England. It's actually in Rallashire.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when you spoke earlier about people being naive consumers,
sure.
Apart from, advising to take your time, how can people become educated consumers? And I guess I'm talking about people who want to plan their own funeral. And then, yes, the loved ones, relatives and friends who perhaps are left with the job of preparing a funeral.
Sure. If the people roughly fall into two categories, there are people who are quite comfortable considering, planning and talking about future funerals, their own included, and other people just simply don't want to. And there's nothing wrong with that. Oftentimes if someone's sick or dying, people would rather be focused in the last days rather than the days after the death. So if you're a planner and you're an inquirer, you've got it pretty easy, because you can just start ringing funeral directors and ask questions and ask them to send you information and ask them what services they provide. And you can make those decisions over time. The people who have the greatest difficulties are the other group who just want to handle it when it happens. And my advice to them is to not deal with the funeral director in one go. If you know who you might want to use or whose help you might want to get, ring that funeral director, get them to come and see you, or just get information that you want about all the things that they can offer, and then take 2 days and have a think about it. Really need to take some time, because the emotional trauma of a death, even when it's expected, it pretty well affects everyone. And when we're upset, our ability to problem solve and make clear decisions is diminished.
And should you see more than one? Like, should you, I mean, is it like anything, really? You get 3 quotes I don't know, Kevin.
There's nothing to stop you doing that. But really, so long as you take some time and you decide what it is you want, most funeral directors are fairly similar in what they all provide for you. There'll be some cost differences. It's probably so much shopping around, but look, it never hurts. You like all things, you get what you pay for in some senses. The paper I mentioned earlier is interesting. They talked about the funeral as being broken up, and they use these terms. They said there's the software component and the hardware component, and really the funeral director provides the hardware, the hearse, the use of a mortuary and storage facility, the provision of a coffin, because that's not something you can get from Bunnings. Maybe we should. And the other part is the software, which is the actual service itself, and it's really the most important bit, and that's what I've found in the latter parts of my time in the industry, some people were taking that very much in hand within the family. Traditionally, of course, a minister or a priest or someone would provide the structure of the service, but invariably now you see much more content coming from the families. So they're the software provider. So in a sense, the paper from the UK asked the question, well, if the service, the software, is the most important part, why is the funeral director still the primary contractor? Surely the process of arranging the funeral, thinking about the service and the ceremony and who speaks and whether there'll be some music or a rock band or somber, solemn music comes first, and then the provision of the physical assistance, which is vital and useful and required by legislation, should almost take a second seat to that. But the industry's grown up in a way where it's become more and more commercial. There are large corporate operators in Australia who control somewhere around 60% of the funerals in metropolitan areas.
60% is a huge chunk, isn't it, Kevin?
Very big.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the chat this afternoon.
Pleasure.
Kevin Hartley was a funeral director for a quarter of a century.